हरिः ॐ सहना चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
The Supreme Lord having a Satchitananda form is not perceivable to the cognitional faculty of the jivas, but only realized by the spiritual function called bhakti. Right? So here now he's specifically giving what it's saying in the Nectar Devotion, that he's not perceivable to the cognitive faculty. It means through the senses the Lord cannot be perceived. Right? So only through bhakti can he be perceived. Right? That was the verse. Now we're on the third, I think the third paragraph on page 10. A question may be asked, if bhakti is the natural faculty for every soul, why so many people are unable to believe in the Lord? The explanation is that if the object of that faculty is far away from the faculty, or if there are obstacles between them, then the natural faculty becomes unmanifested and remains dormant. For instance, a childless person does not understand the parental affection. An unmarried woman cannot realize the conjugal love of the husband. Similarly, the self-evident divine love cannot manifest itself within the ignorant, worldly-minded fallen souls. Atheists engaged in materialistic thoughts exclusively and thus become unable to relish the unalloyed divine love. So in other words, it's there. The natural faculty to understand or perceive the Lord is there, but because one is absorbed in ignorance or worldly mindedness, therefore it won't manifest, because it'll only manifest through devotion. Right? Other than devotion, it can't be perceived. That's the point. Because as we started yesterday, the natural tendency is the intelligence is very much trying that it will catch how it works. Right? We're always trying because we understand so many things, but what we're understanding is things of this world. So the intelligence is one of the elements of this world. Right? And so therefore it can understand things of this world. But the Lord being beyond, one can't. Just like one can't understand the soul by the intelligence. One can get an idea that something is there, like we can get an idea that there's a supreme. Therefore, but exact details we can't. Therefore, we say supreme, or here the reality, tattva. Then there's not a problem. Problem comes is then when we start to give detail of that. So when we say form, then we think we should be able to see it. So that's the difficulty, is we can't get the Lord within our grasp, right? Mother Jashoda couldn't tie him up with a rope. She's right there, so, and the rope, he's small, he's a baby. So how much rope does it take to go around your waist?
More than all the gopis have.
Right? Yeah, so it's like more than that. So generally, even the rope for tying the hind legs of a cow should be enough. But even that's, and you tie how many ropes there are in Vrindavan together and still it won't go around. Because he's unlimited. So that means is we can't grasp him with the intelligence, with the senses, like that. But, we are very enthusiastic to try, but it doesn't work. So it's only through the devotion that the Lord will reveal himself. When Mother Jashoda, that devotion was there, then he allowed her to tie it. Right? So that's the thing, is he can't be tied, but he can be. He's not perceivable, but he can be perceived. So if he allows, you can be perceived. But if not, one can't. So we can't demand or this or that. You know, so many things we could demand. How do I know that, you know, I've been in India. How do I actually know that, you know, there's a president in America and his name's Obama and he exists? You know, how do I know it's not propaganda? Right? Does that make sense? So how do I know? So unless I demand, he has to come here and then I'll believe in it. Is that going to work? Anyone's going to agree? So why would I make this demand and that God has to come just because I said so? You know, it's not going to work.
It's still being controlled by the majority.
Yes, it's still.
I have to control God in order to believe in
him. Yes. If I can't control him, then like that, because anything that I can control, I really don't want to know about. Because if I can't control it, it means I'm not the supreme controller. And that's not the conclusion that I'm looking for. You know, so therefore we see it comes that it's a misgiving. They'll think it's their intelligence. Oh, I'm being more intelligent. I'm being logical, practical. No, they're actually being overwhelmed by the misgiving that there can't be something that they can't perceive of. Right? There's so many things in this world they're working for that take faith or affection or all these things. And so, and they have to say they're there, but they don't worry about them. You know, but that which they can control, that they worry about.
But there are so many, these people would then say that, oh, there are so many things that I can't understand that I acknowledge, like microbiology or something, but it's still within the framework of the material.
Yeah, it's still within the framework of the material. But this is just, it goes beyond that.
Yeah.
So that's why they can't, you know, if they're, the idea that everything has to be coming from matter.
So is it because, let's say, microbiology, they could understand it if they spent the time?
Yeah,
whereas
yeah,
God, they
yes.
can't ever.
No, they can't ever. So that's the difficulty. That's why they don't like the idea.
Mm.
You know, but you find for a great amount of scientists, it's not a problem.
Mm.
But they'll separate it. There's the science and then there's the faith.
Mm. Okay.
But the Vedic, the two don't have to be separated. Because the point is science is there because what you have faith in has created. You know, you're only, if we say the laws of nature, those laws of nature had to be defined by someone. Right? So that someone who does, that's where the faith is. Does that make sense? Okay. So, Here an argument may be raised. If mental speculation has no access to the ultimate reality, then instead of discussing this Tattva Sutra, it is better to engage in meditation, prayer, adoration, and worship of the deity, right? Because now we took the what, you know, the materialists will say. Now we'll take the element of either the religionists, right, or moralists, or the devotees who are, you know, into practical work. You know, their conditioning is karma, and there's no interest in jnana. Right? This doubt is unnecessary because the knowledge discussed in Tattva Sutra is not like the dry, impersonal knowledge, but it is the very presentation of the unalloyed principles of bhakti. Bhakti is characterized by divine attachment to the Lord, and it is independent from karma and jnana. Right, because you have activities, but there's a mood of being attached to the Lord. That's the point. Being attached, you're naturally going to do something, right? How do you express attachment? Yes. At least a minimum, you have to talk, which is an activity. You have to engage the senses. Otherwise, how someone will know? You know, you're sitting there thinking that you want, you know, a bright pink Maybach. How will anyone know unless you say it? It can't be understood. It's a luxury car that costs in the millions. And when you go, it means you order it, you go there personally to the place, and they show you unlimited colors, unlimited doors, unlimited this, unlimited that, and you pick from. In other words, I think there's some millions and millions of combinations that you could get, you know. And if you have to ask how much is this is going to cost, don't even bother going there. So it's one of those kind of cars.
Tyler. Hmm?
Yeah. And so it's kind of like we've heard of Rolls Royce because that's kind of within a framework we can think of, you know, a few hundred thousand or something. But this is up in the millions, so it's one of those cars you generally never hear. Did I explain it right? Or,
what's the spelling?
M-I-Y-B-A-C-H. It's a German car. I think they're affiliated with Mercedes. Okay, so there's attachment. So that attachment has to be expressed. So when it's expressed through the senses. So that's the devotional service. Does that make sense? But the attachment is there. That's why when we try these others, you know, I'll do this technique or that activity, then we're working within the realm of karma yoga and jnana yoga. Right? Because it's starting from the activity and then the result will be for Krishna. Right? It can still be pure. But the point is it's not the ultimate what Krishna is looking for, where it starts from the attachment and then is engaged, rather than there's the engagement and then that attachment is purified.
Sakam, Nishkam.
Yeah. Or even there, the Nishkam is that it's starting with the Lord rather than what you're working with. Right? Because you could do management as Nishkam, but you like management, that's why you're doing it. But here, Nishkam, here we're talking about you want to do something for Krishna, some management needs to be done, you know how to manage, you have that skill, so you'll do that for Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's slightly different. So you're starting with the attachment, and then the expression of the attachment, rather than the activities that you can do. So it ends up on activity. But see, the other one starts with sambandha, the field. You know, in our relationship with the Lord, in the way of knowledge, right? Then we're applying that through activity to get the result for the Lord. This one is you're starting out with attachment for the Lord. Then you're going to perform an activity according to the field. So everything will be there, but it's just where you're starting. Does that make sense?
Could some confusion arise if we're so attached to the Lord that we actually start doing some activities that we're not really qualified for? Some management needs to be done, I'll do it for the Lord, but I'm maybe not even qualified.
Well, it just depends upon, if we're taking it that your attachment is complete, then I don't think there'll be a problem, because you'll get it done by some other method.
Okay.
You know, just by being so nice and Krishna conscious, everybody will be inspired, and they have abilities, they'll get it done. Does that make sense? You know, so like that. But here is generally, if one is on that platform of attachment, one is beyond confusion, so that one
yeah.
will know that he can do or not do that, or so then he'll go and ask somebody who can.
So therefore, Kladini is always dependent. She cannot be independent like Krishna.
No, you know, that means that's all energy. So we're starting with that aspect, then moving back to Krishna. So in other words, we're approaching Krishna through the internal potency. We're starting with the prayojana, and then moving back there. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So I guess then your goal-oriented methods would have that, but they're not connected to Krishna. So. Right? Does that make sense? So you're going to approach Krishna, who is sambandha, through prayojana. Right? Because the prayojana is Krishna's pleasure, you know, and his connection with the internal potency. So we can assist the internal potency. Like that. The other, we're starting with knowledge. Here's Krishna, he's God, he's supreme, and so therefore I, as servant, should serve him. So that means there you're using knowledge. So it's useful. But the point is to come to attachment.
Right? The key word is should. I should serve
him. Yes.
Yeah.
But the other is that's not a consideration. You just serve. when such attachment is directed towards the Lord alone, it is real. But if attachment is applied towards a material object, the result is fearful binding to this world. Therefore, the inquiry after the Supreme Reality is the root of spiritual advancement. Unless the Supreme Reality is clearly identified and realized, there can be no genuine attachment for it. And yet, so how can you be attached to something you don't know? Right? Like that, so that you know is there. So even in principle, then one can start that attachment. You know, like you're saying, the orphan child, or then they don't know parents. They've grown up in the foster system. They've never had that parent. But then when they find out that it wasn't that the parents died, but they for some reason were given up at birth, then there's and they're alive. Then there's that thing that attachment can start. You don't know who they are, anything about it, but it can begin. Right? It's general. So the point is that attachment to the Lord can begin as soon as we understand who He is and who we are in the natural relation. Is that what I'm saying? So this also is a very, like you see, is a perfect approach, because what is the point of why do all this? Here it says, an argument may be raised. If mental speculation has no access to the ultimate reality, then instead of discussing this Tattva Sutra, so they're connecting mental speculation with this discussion, right? Because you're taking intellectual things and contemplating it from different angles, right? It's technically called vichar. So you have vichar and you have mental speculation, right? So those who understand it will call it vichar, those who don't will call it mental speculation in the devotional. But when it's not devotional, of course, it's always mental speculation. So wouldn't it be better to engage in these things, right? Because they're things, be attached to the Lord. So he uses the point of attachment. He answers it according to where their value is. So this is also an example of excellence in, you know, how you say, in preaching or removing doubt, is you remove the doubt with the very thing that their doubt is about. Right? Rather than try to, no, knowledge is that, by that, you can do not like that, because they're not relating to that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the question. Right? Their point is just be attached to the Lord, just express yourself, just, you know, show the devotion. But his point here is that devotion can be shown when you know who you're showing it for. Therefore, while vain arguments and hostile rationalism are definitely harmful to faith, the study of the ultimate reality is different from them. Right? So now he's saying, yes, these other things are not important, but devotional understanding, devotional knowledge is. Those who do not have sambandhagyan will not be able to ascertain their own degradation, even when their attachment is applied to a material object apart from the Lord. If you don't have sambandhagyan or knowledge of relationship, then those things that those attachments that are degrading you, you won't be able to identify them. So it's only as you get knowledge then you can see, right? Because before one takes up Krishna consciousness, one's engaged in all kinds of activities, but they're not considered bad. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you go into the restaurant and eat all kinds of nonsense, that's not considered bad. It's just a meal. If you went into the restaurant, stole it, okay, maybe that would fix that. But and did that, or you know, you go out to the bar, pick up somebody like that, spend the night. No one's gonna tell you. It'll just say, you know, that's what you do on Saturday night or something. You know what I'm saying? You know, but if you do that on Monday night, they'll say that's not good, because then at work the next day you're not going to be functioning properly. So that's wrong. You understand? So it's only after being aware of it by knowledge, then we're able to identify these things aren't very useful. Why? Because they're bad for devotional development. Right? So does that make sense? So therefore the knowledge is important.
So we get worse karma when we are in knowledge.
Yes, but at the same time, it also has to be something that has better, it has greater effect.
Yeah, so the stakes are just higher.
Stakes are higher, but also in certain things, it doesn't really matter if you know or don't know. The reaction is not any different.
Yeah, if you jump overboard.
Yeah, whether you have great knowledge or not, the result's the same. But something that will have, just for example, an illicit connection, or even not illicit, just a connection between, let's say, a Brahmin and a Shudra. Right? That's going to produce a species of life that's not going to fit into the social structure and is going to be detrimental. So that's worse than a Kshatriya with a Shudra or a Vaishya with a Shudra, because it will be less bad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But ultimately, all of that's useless. I'm saying, so if it has that, that'll have greater consequences. But if it's the same activity and the Brahmin does it, and the Shudra does it, the punishment for the Shudra is greater than the Brahmin. Because the Brahmin has knowledge, therefore, on that platform of knowledge, it can be explained to him and he can appreciate and therefore give it up. While the Shudra, because of his attachment, doesn't have that knowledge, so even you explain it, he won't be able to give it up. Therefore, without the punishment, he's not going to stop.
And the Brahmin shouldn't know it already? Whatever.
He should, but it doesn't mean that you don't do something wrong. Right? Because here we're working on, you can do good karma and bad karma at the same time. You can do good things and bad. So they're independent of each other. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that we'll take it as one thing and then therefore everything's bad. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the yeah, we have to be able to discern, you know, where to look for what's proper. So even here is, you know, what he's saying about the glass half full. We have to actually even know what a glass is, what half full is, and what, you know, what stuff goes in glasses. You know what I'm saying? You know, if we try to put the a bicycle tire in our glass, it won't work. So even if we try, it still won't get half full. So there's not even a symptom that we've endeavored that others can take. No, but he's trying so hard.
So if you close one eye, would your glasses be half full?
That's an interesting point. Would the glasses be half full? Or if you half close your eyes?
Yeah.
Therefore, one should know that it is most essential for the devotees to carefully understand the reality and to apply their unalloyed love towards Him alone, along with the cessation of dry abnegation and unproductive arguments. Right? So, yeah. Dry abnegation means you're giving up, but not for a purpose. It's just, it's supposed to be good or some reason. Does that make sense? That's why you'll have find somebody, they're renounced, and they're inspiring. You see that, and then they make a comment on something, and that really, you know, you feel very inspired. But someone else is very renounced, and when they make comments, it just annoys you. Right? Because the one is dry and the other one's not. Does that make sense? If anyone does not care for the study of the reality due to excessive attachment, he must be either a totally liberated soul or someone who's extremely bound to this world, right? Paramahamsa or the Muda. This is the secret of this Tattva Sutra. One should engage in the study of the kindest teachings of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Then his heart will be filled with extreme admiration. Without the inquiry after the supreme reality, innumerable births spent in hearing and chanting will not be able to fetch divine love at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Yeah, so here he's even making, because we see is that the human symptom is there when we inquire. So it's natural you're going to inquire. Sanatana Goswami's first thing was he would inquire, because he said he had so much knowledge. You know, he's sitting with the pandits discussing Bhagavatam. They're going to be talking in Sanskrit. He knows Persian, right? He'll know Bengali. You know, he's a scholar. He's managing the kingdom. It's not a small kingdom. You know, this is East and West Bengal, parts of Orissa, parts of Assam, or even the whole of Assam. That's a big place as far as the place goes, and it's the most densely populated place in India. Right? So he's a big manager. Does that make sense? He's a big manager. So he says he knows so many things, but he doesn't know who he is. So that's where he begins his spiritual life. That's his first question, or his first, you know, point he makes to Lord Chaitanya. And we also see with Narad Muni, when he approaches, I forget who he approaches, but he makes the point that I've studied all the scriptures, but I still don't know what's the highest thing. And then we see, maybe it's the four Kumaras, or somebody approaches Pipalada, and they say the same thing. Right? They want to know what the essence is. So knowledge is always inherent. One has to know. That's what probably made it part of the program that we study. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Mantra 4, through mental speculation, even the greatest philosopher cannot know the Supreme Lord, who is the absolute personality of Godhead. He can be known only by his devotees through his mercy. In the Brahma Samhita 5.34, it is stated that even if a non-devotee philosopher travels through space at the speed of the wind or the mind for hundreds of millions of years, he will still find the absolute truth is far, far away from him. Although the individual parts and parcels of the Lord's potencies have all the symptoms of the Lord himself, they have limited spheres of activity and are therefore all limited. The parts and parcels are never equal to the whole. Therefore, they cannot appreciate the Lord's full potency. Under the influence of material nature, foolish and arrogant living beings, who are but parts and parcels of the Lord, try to conjecture about the Lord's transcendental position. Sri Isha Upanishad warns of the futility of trying to establish the identity of the Lord through mental speculation. One should try to learn of the transcendence from the Lord himself, the supreme source of the Vedas, for the Lord alone has full knowledge of the transcendence. Another interesting point is that they're traveling, he's still far, far away, but what are they traveling through? Space. The space and mind, does space or the mind have any connection with the Lord?
No.
Material, but is that energy him? So it's contained within him. So they're traveling through the Lord and can't see the Lord. So that also establishes his transcendental position, is that even though he's everything, you still can't see him. That means he must be transcendent. So it's only by his grace then you can perceive him through your faculties.
Same that they are. Because you have other schools, for example, the Christians, they will also admit to this point that you cannot understand the Lord by your own faculty, therefore you have to follow the Bible.
No, therefore you have to follow what's given by the Lord. So one could then say that the Bible is one of such delineations. Because otherwise, if it's monotheistic, then they'll say, well, this is our God, that's your God. But then, if there's only one God, there's only one God. You know what I'm saying? There's not more than one God. So they can say, well, this is Muslim God, Christian, Jewish. No, it's the same person. There's no difference. So, you know what I'm saying? So, therefore, that is a book that you can approach the Lord through. That will give some knowledge.
But they will reject the Vedas.
But that's another book. The point is, if they can only accept their book, then that's nice that they at least accept one of them. But then, having said that, then what? You know? And then how well does that go down? So then, therefore, if you only accept the Bible, but now if we're being honest here, the Bible is a Jewish literature. You know, given by the God of Abraham. So we're talking about the same God. So therefore, the Jews and the Christian are worshiping the same God. So what's the problem? And since they were first, and Jesus was Jewish, wouldn't it be natural that all Christians are Jews that accept Jesus as the Messiah? That would be In other words, Jews for Jesus, right? You know, that would be the reality.
That's what the Seventh Day Adventists claim.
Yeah, and then and so and what does the Seventh Adventist Day Adventist say about a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon or a Catholic or an East Orthodox? Are they going to get Jesus' grace? No. So therefore then that you follow the Bible isn't actually the point. The point is unless you do what they're doing, then you're not going to get anywhere. That's all. They're saying, so they're not actually dealing as a science, they're only dealing in their faith, because their faith could change. We're saying is that if the science is there, is that you're going to approach God through, you know, his literatures and through the devotees. So which ones are used, that's another thing. Right? But the point is that you, and now in approaching the Lord, there's different levels. So you can approach him just to get something, but you can also approach for the reciprocation and pure devotion. Therefore, you know, you choose what you want. You know, you want to go to heaven, and they don't talk about you doing anything with God. Nothing. You know, flip through the tablets, you know, it's like that. There's, you know, smiling little girls, you know, cuddling, you know, talking lions while they ride in the little boats and, you know, have their nice time and all that. And where's God?
He's outside of your sin. What's my plan is about that friend that will get rid of your sin.
That's there. But I'd say he's outside at the front door, you know, like that. So God's a doorman. That's okay if it was vomiting day, but... You know what I'm saying? But so there's it's not about developing a relationship with Godhead. Like that. Some will appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that we're talking a science here. So science always applies. Now what you want from that's another thing. Does that make sense? Yeah? Just like you live in the monastery. Now, in the monastery, then there is an allowance. They have a fancy name for it. An allowance that you can get a certain amount of wine every day. Right? It's enough where it will do the job, but you won't get drunk. Right? Now, it said it's all right to take that, but it's better if you don't. So even within that, they'll have levels of what's better. So we're just taking it up to the point of absolute, you know, pure unalloyed love. So that's not discussed, so that's there. So if we accept that there's all these different scriptures, so then some of the scriptures go farther. So what's the problem? Right? Yes? No? In his book, Amnaya Sutra, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, although realization of the impersonal aspect of the Supreme is not the final goal, it is sometimes a useful intermediary stage. That the realization of the impersonal aspect of the Supreme is sometimes useful at a certain stage of spiritual development is seen in these words of the Ishopanishad, Mantra 7. Quote, one who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks, in quality with the Lord, becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? But the intermediate stage of impersonal is not always recommended, as it is shown in the Sri Ishopanishad Mantra 12. Quote, those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. If someone misunderstands the eternally existent transcendental and blissful divinity as a transient entity bound by time and space, the next sutra... Okay, this is opening the next. So, in other words, the understanding has some use as long as you always keep it connected to the Lord. But if it's not connected to the Lord, it's not of any use. You know, so it will get one out of the material world, seemingly, but at the same time... It doesn't. You're still within material consciousness. So he's making the bringing out the point here that these techniques where we see the soul, see the energies working, all this, we're dealing with the impersonal aspect. But for us, that impersonal is para-Brahman. Because we know it's the personality that is, you know, affecting this.
Yes. So persons with tendencies towards jnana can be, let's say, nurtured to appreciate this Brahman aspect of jiva and energies of the Lord?
Can be. But you, you discuss it the way we've been discussing it here. It's just that, but that's only if they inquire in that way. But, you know, if they do, because a lot of people are interested in it, but don't really have much knowledge, you know. You know what I'm saying? They know a few words and they do a little bit more than the common person. So it appears as a lot, but not really. They don't discuss philosophy that deeply. In fact, most, it means, you know, here we're talking about, you know, hardcore philosophers. But how often do you ever bump into one of them? Most of the time, these yoga societies and this and that, they're all doing some variety of karma yoga, some meditation maybe. You know, like that. But that's mainly what they'll be doing. So they don't get so much into these things. You discuss these things, it's very interesting to them. But they don't really know this stuff. You know, a few of the words you say, then they'll know, so they'll catch on that. But they don't really go very deeply into it. You know, so it's not a problem. You just have to discuss our philosophy from this particular point of view, from discussing tattva, then they're fine. You don't discuss rasa, you just discuss tattva, and they're happy.
Now, if a person is a devotee, one doesn't Bhagavan, automatically understand this impersonal aspect.
Yeah. I mean, it's there. See, only when he mentions like this does it become clear what it is. Because we'll say we're a spirit soul, you know, we're servant of Krishna, like that. But that's discussing Brahman. He's the supreme Brahman. We're the infinitesimal Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So that's the level we're discussing that at. Then we say we're servant. So we render service. Now you're talking about the relationship with Bhagavan. You know, or the world is controlled, the Lord controls the world, He's in every atom, between every atom. We're talking Paramatma here. Right? That He is the taste in water, that's the Brahman aspect. You know what I'm saying? When we say Brahman, it doesn't mean nothingness. That's the illusory idea of the Mayavadis. There's no such thing as nothingness. They talk nothingness because all they're doing is speaking Buddhist philosophy in Vedic terms, that's all. And using Vedic references to establish it. But they're only discussing Buddhism. They're Buddhists. They're not actually impersonalists. It means Brahmavadis. They'll say, because that's the closest thing, it seems like that, and they can get away with it. But they're not actually, they're Buddhists. Like that. It's just because they use Vedic terminology, it doesn't sound like Buddhist.
You see that in Bhagavad Gita there are many verses where Krishna explains about his karma aspect.
Yes, yes. I mean, 7th chapter, 10th, 11th, yes. it's all about that. Like that. And then if you see the activities of that and the interactions, then your Paramatma aspects.
So I assume that there is a reason.
A reason, because when you have an area that seems like this, if you're attached to something, unless you get a higher taste, I can't break the attachment. But because you have an attachment, how are you going to get a higher taste?
By engaging it.
By engaging it. But in here is, you're going to engage it because you have a desire, so therefore, means you can just engage it because the desire is there, so connect it. But what he's talking here is, now if I take something you really like, and I break it down into little pieces, it loses that attraction. Right? Does that make sense? He has his computer here. If we take it apart, every last bolt, and just spread it out here on the thing, do we go, wow, nice computer? You know what I'm saying? No, it loses something. So that's the idea, is that you dismantle it through this process of, because it's according, by Brahman it's working, by Paramatma it's working. So therefore we dismantle it, and then it's not as attractive. Then it's easier to work with in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, even trying to engage it in Krishna's service, there's the tendency to still try to use it for yourself or get something from it. So the more you can break it down. But even if you can't, then by engaging it, even if there is that serious mix of one's own affections there, it'll slowly, but if, unless that determination is there to continue with that long enough where it becomes dynamic, you can get distracted. Right? Because otherwise, how do you stay determined unless you have knowledge? Right? So in other words, the endeavor for understanding these things then is very worthwhile. Does that make sense? So that's why we say is the path for the impersonalist and the path for the devotees up to the point of liberation is the same. It's the same road. Just they see it as the end. It's the terminal, philosophical, the supreme. But for us, it's just an intermediate. You know, it's not the end. It's just between the material world and the spiritual. To function in the spiritual world, you have to be out of the material world. So therefore, that's the intermediate stage. Does that make sense? So it's not that we take up impersonal philosophy. No, it's already... Impersonal philosophy means that you've extracted from the devotional process only the things dealing with the Lord in the impersonal feature. Then it's called impersonalism. You understand? Just like if you want to cook lunch, then you're going to make a menu and go out and buy things, right? But now, then you're going to come back, prepare them, cook, serve your meal, do all that, right? So you call that, you're cooking. You know what I'm saying? Like you're writing a menu, and then somebody calls on the phone, sorry, I'm busy now, I'm cooking. You know? You understand? It's part. Now, if you remove that from that whole cooking process, there'll be people who just make menus or just go do marketing. You know what I'm saying? So, they're not cooking. The guy in charge of the hotel, when he sits down with the chefs or the head of the restaurant and works out the menu or approves the menu, he's not cooking. They are. He's not. Right? So, the impersonalists have simply taken that aspect from the devotional service where we see how Krishna pervades everything with his energies. So actually it's Krishna we're working with anyway, and it's Krishna that we're looking for anyway. So therefore, why not turn our attention to Krishna? Because that's the nature of the living entity, because we're the soul, not the body. This is all misunderstanding. You know what I'm saying? But then from there, then it takes on, now you want to do that. Now that's just intelligence, right? I'm soul, I'm eternal, so you're functioning in the Brahman platform. Right? But because we're explaining it in connection with devotional service, therefore it's not going to come across as impersonal. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to take it that way. That's why even in explaining these things, you always have to now and again throw in about the Lord and devotional service. So even you're giving a discussion, you're referring to the reality or the tattva or the absolute truth or the supreme. Now and again you have to bring in the element of the person and the devotion. Otherwise, they may get greatly inspired and just use it in their own narrative. Does that make sense? So, the devotee is using that to get one out of the material, but they don't have any attachment to Krishna. But they now are aware that there's material and spiritual. Right? And there's natural activities and results in spiritual, so they can take up that process. And they want to be happy. This is actually how they're going to be. Does that make sense?
Alright. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that the impersonal aspect has two angles. One, it is useful for some stage.
Yes.
But then again at the end, it is said in the same Subhanishad that it brings.
It's not always recommended. those who engage in worship, and those, the worshippers of the impersonal absolute, but we're not worshippers of the impersonal absolute. We're worshippers of the Supreme Lord, though we may be on certain aspects appreciating the impersonal position, because the impersonal, the formless, the form, and the localized are all one person. They're all aspects of the same person. You know what I'm saying? So that's why he's saying here is that it's useful, although, yeah, because he's saying, because this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Although realization of the impersonal aspect of the Supreme is not the final goal, it is sometimes a useful intermediary stage. The Bhagavatam is explaining it, second canto, when it's describing the universal form. Like that. Gita is doing that. So it's a useful stage to convince one of the devotion. So as a devotee, one is already convinced when someone's not using it, but there may be an aspect of one's life that one's very attached to. One may need to use that to break the attachment in that specific area, but it doesn't mean you use it in everything in your life. So it's use, so therefore it becomes an intermediary there between getting what you're doing that's material to bring it to spiritual, and then once it's come to that, then I can engage it devotionally. Does that make sense? Yeah. So someone who their whole sadhana and whole understanding is impersonal, they have a problem. But someone who's personal, you know, personal, devotional, and then they use it here and there where it's the attachment may benefit by using that approach. That's useful. Because he says here, the worshippers of the impersonal Brahman. We're not worshippers of the impersonal absolute. We're worshippers of Krishna.
Why it brings to the darkest region of ignorance?
Because it's like, okay, the worship of the demigods enter the darkest region of ignorance.
And usually, the darkest region of ignorance would refer to the hellish planet, right?
That it can. It can just, the point is that we, it's just like this. Let's say, I have some I can't even remember what it's called. After they make the mozzarella, then they apply that the rennet again on the whey, and then they get ricotta, right? Yeah. So you have some ricotta, right? Then you have some mozzarella. Right? Then you have some aged, a little bit aged stuff, you know, lightly. Number one, let's say, Swiss cheese. Then you have number five. Right? Then you have Limburger. Is there a difference? It's all cheese, but, you know, which one gets smellier than the other? Or another example. Let us say you take some grapes, right, and you stick them in a big pot and let them rot there for a while, right? And, you know, I think you need to, what, a month or maybe it's a few months, I don't remember exactly. But you do that. Then after that, you stick it in, you know, a keg or something like that. And then leave it there for, you know, some years like that. Then they're going to drag all this out and put it in these funny little glasses. And then these guys will come along. They won't be Lenez. They'll be what? It'll be the tongue, right?
Yes.
The taste, right? The taster, right? Lanez means the nose, you know, for the perfume. So this is the tongue. The tongue, yeah. So then they'll bring it out and they'll taste these. Then they'll tell you which one of these, you know, rotten grapes is better than the other rotten grapes. Does that make sense? Okay. So we're just saying, no, but that's the hellish planet, because we think this place is okay. You understand?
Because the devotee keeps you in the material world.
Yeah, but it's all from the transcendental platform. It's all hell. Yeah. Even the life as Brahma is hell.
Because it destroys your personality.
No, it means you're neglecting who you actually are. So the soul isn't functioning actually properly. So if the soul isn't recognized as the soul, where's the ananda? Right? So, what bothers the soul? It's not activities. It's not knowledge. Right? It's the temporariness and the lack of happiness. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
I was thinking that the word worship might be important.
Yes.
The word worship, I can't remember all four, but there are four aspects that I remember reading in Bhagavatam.
Okay.
To meditate, to offer service, there's four.
That means worship.
That means worship.
Yeah.
To remember.
Well, that would also be your Gita, that one. Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji man namaskuru. These four would be worship also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it's talking about actually worshiping, you're not giving
your
devotion.
Yes, you're not giving devotion.
Just working with it.
Yes. Now here, example. Darkest ignorance, but, you know, everyone will say what do you call it? That, you know, a mom will say, you know, cute and cuddly. You understand? So the point is that it's a perception within the material. What you'll say is hellish. Someone else going into, you know, the 5-star hotel, and they don't have, you know, some aspect that was there that they saw in Burj Al Khalif, then it's hell. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that it's just, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's hellish. But now, of hell, at least the senses and the person and the mind and relationships and interaction is going on. You know, even if you're in hell, still, you're not just somehow or another on top of the mountain and then fall off. Yamadutas are there actually dragging you up and throwing you off. You know, so at least it's personal. You know who's throwing you off the mountain.
You develop a relationship with you walking up the mountain.
I'm not sure. I don't know if it'd do any good, but...
You come here often.
Huh?
Not one of the primary rushes.
No, not one of the primary rushes. Yeah, you know, horror, fear, you know, like that. You know, like that. Yeah, ghastliness, that would definitely be...
The question I always have is, who takes breakfast as a Yamadut?
Didn't we already explain?
Yes.
Sorry, we weren't here. It's not you don't take birth as one, you become one. You take birth as a Petri, you become a Yamadut. So, But the impersonal Brahman, there's no senses, no activity, no nothing. So for the living entity who's Satchitananda, that's more hellish. So that's why the worship is the impersonal absolute. It's the most hellish existence. It seems great. You know, they remove the pains of the world created by the mind and senses. But what they don't realize is that they then fall into a situation that's more hellish. You know, it's going out of the frying pan into the fire, right? But of course, there is no pan and there is no fire. Yes?
Brahmavadi understands that Jiva is a minute particle?
It's all, yeah. Means they're separate than the body, but the body is also Brahman. So the point is there, it's not a matter of worrying about these, it's a matter of being able to appreciate Brahman. Does that make sense?
When the devotees use the word bliss,
yes,
it doesn't interest people much. But when the Mayavadis use the word bliss and they play some yum 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 music, then everybody gets where they get it from? Why?
Because they believe in the bliss. So if the devotees believe in the bliss, then it'll have some meaning. Yeah, there's the chit potency. I mean, back in the 70s, that was all you used was bliss and ecstasy and stuff like that.
Jai nectar bliss.
Hmm?
Jai nectar bliss.
Yeah, nectar bliss, auspicious. So it's a matter of these... Point is you use what will happiness works. People, you use the word happiness, they'll be comfortable with that. You know what I'm saying? So you just, you know, use these terms. If these things don't mean anything to them, don't use them. Because you're speaking to the particular audience. Does that make sense? Yeah.
you may be asked the power by which a particular person, the inner power.
Yeah, but that's as faith. So if you have that faith, then that conviction, then you'll be more convinced. So in either way, it's the Lord, but one is through devotion, and where you'll know Him, and one is not. Just like if one wants to worship a demigod, Krishna says in the Gita, He gives the faith by which you can take that up. Because the demigod can't produce the faith. So only Krishna can do that. Right? So therefore, if somebody wants something material, it's Krishna who will give it, but you have to be sincere. Right? You sincerely have to want to be materialistic. And then you'll get the faith to be materialistic. So therefore, you can convince others to be materialistic. Does that make sense? That's because more people are interested in materialism than spiritual. But if somebody's interested in the spiritual, it'll have effect. Because you, because you don't have to do anything. It's easy. You know, you maybe 20 minutes a day or 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 1 minute a day or whenever you feel, then you do some little thing like that. You don't have to follow the four regular principles. You don't have to chant 16 rounds. You don't have to give anything up. There's, basically speaking, you could probably say this, there's no impersonalists preaching in the West that preach jnana. They all preach karma. You know, do your work. You know, it's like we were just at one ashram. They're all karma sannyasis. So everybody's wearing saffron. Men, women, everybody. Because they're all karma sannyasis. You know, like in Krishna says in Gita, you know, karma sannyas. So that's, they're all karma sannyasis. They don't preach jnana. And even when I was talking these things, they says, we've heard some about this, but we don't discuss it much because we're into karma. Like that. You go to Varanasi and they're talking in Sanskrit, then you'll hear jnana. Otherwise, you're not going to hear. They're all talking karma, so therefore it's much, it's more, it's nice, and it's for them, and it's material. You know, you can be God, you can be happy. Right? You just have to change your attitude, and then you'll be a happy materialist rather than an unhappy one. But we're saying you have to give up being a materialist. You'll be happy, but you have to give up being a materialist. Right? And most devotees don't know how to leave someone in their position and connect it to Krishna. You know, I mean, before when preaching was very dynamic, you had to, you know, sell your house, sell your car, sell this and that, or give it to the temple, or do something, get rid of it, and then move into the temple. And when that kind of stopped, then I haven't seen that there's a dynamic, another kind of preaching. You know what I'm saying? A few devotees, yes. But other than that, you know, Pratapana can do, Devamrita Maharaj, they just make devotees. Others, you know, you've heard about it. Does that make sense? Like that. So they're just presenting something that people want to hear. Right? But you think there's a lot of people there. There's some people coming there, and they're maybe paying a little money, maybe not. But now there's somebody giving a seminar on how to become successful, and people are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to go and listen to that. Because it's just what they want to hear. We're saying something that they should want to hear, but they don't. Is that okay?
How to get it into the society?
By practicing it yourself, then you can do it. Because if you're convinced of it, then you can convince others.
You're not convinced enough.
At least in this particular area. We're not convinced that you can be a congregational member and be on the platform of pure devotional service. You know, it's basically something that is practical. You know, the temples, you know, like this, or you make develop congregations. But what is the level the congregation is going to get to, and how? That's not explained. You know what I'm saying? Those who are professing congregational preaching as an organized system are working on that. But when you have the temple's management starts to fall apart, and so therefore they create a committee out of the congregation to make the congregation the prominent thing, then they don't generally have a clue about the philosophy when it comes to engaging everything in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So if you're convinced of it, then you can convince others. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So now the Sangati for the next verse. If someone misunderstands the eternally existent transcendental and blissful divinity as a transient entity bound by time and space, the next sutra answers this doubt. Because one could, one could have the problem that, well, if he's beyond and you can't understand him, you know, then maybe, you know, he doesn't exist or something. So you're always trying to bring into this purview. Sutra 5. Sacha satyo nityo nadir ananto desha kala paricchedat. The Supreme Lord is an eternal reality, without a beginning or an end, unbound by the influence of time and space. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Contrary to all mundane objects, which always have beginning and end, the Satchitananda personality of Godhead is real, eternal, beginningless, and endless. Time and space are creations of the Lord, and thus they cannot influence Him. The Sri Upanishad Mantras 4 and 8, it is stated. Although fixed in His abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated. If an argument is put forth that the ultimate reality endowed with all those mentioned excellences is quite unintelligible to the human knowledge, and since it is very faintly understandable, can only be a subject of dry speculation of the jivas, the following sutra dispels that doubt. Right? Because there'll be a main point. And then there's all these sub-points. There'll be other doubts that may come up and all that. Sutra 6.
Unintelligible means not accessible by intelligence? Or
where? Which one?
The Sangati, second one.
Of this one. Oh, unintelligible means, yeah, not able to be perceived by the intelligence. Or, you know, or means through the senses.
So that would be the argument of the agnostic? He's there, or you never wrap your mind
around. Yeah, so why bother? You know, why get involved? That's only for dry speculation for the jivas, so therefore we don't, why get involved? You know, we're of this world, we just get involved here. So it's kind of like, you know, a more atheistic, deistic approach. Because the deist puts God far away, but they have faith in Him, you know, on that, but here He's not involved, so therefore we just use our intelligence to get the needful done. But here it's like, but they're willing to discuss God. But in practical life, they don't deal with Him at all. So does that make sense? So in spiritual matters, then you discuss God. But in material, it's your shot. It's your call. Right? Does that make sense? Sounds familiar? So, but this one is saying is that since it can't be understood by the intellect or by the senses or that, then therefore, to try to, you know, discuss and all that is basically just a useless intellectual endeavor. So why bother? So they won't even discuss about God.
It just seems really, really stupid. Because what are they basing that assumption on? You can't grasp. I mean, that they seem to refuse to deal with it. So how can they be so sure they know what it's about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're accepting the point that He is unintelligible, can't, you have to remember is that also the explanations are there. But if you just go, this was the fifth sutra. Hmm. So we've already said He can't be understood by the intelligence. Hmm. He's beyond time and space. He has no beginning and end. So someone might say, so then why should we try to understand Him? Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because in the, yeah.
Because they don't understand the revelation.
Yeah, so they're not understanding through devotion, because in the sutra itself, that will come up in the fourth part. where it talks about the process. Right? But in his commentaries, then we're becoming, you know, privy to this information right from the first sutra.
It just seems like the agnostic in material matters, they're willing to investigate for years on end on small details, but this,
no. Yeah, because there's no interest. There's no. It means you will make the endeavor in some place where you have an interest, where you don't have an interest.
You cannot see a practical.
Yeah, there's nothing practical. It means what would you do with it?
Be happy.
Yeah, but they're happy, you know, hanging out at the pub and with the girls. So at least that's the way that. French philosophers were rolling.
Yeah.
That was their method.
Saturday morning, but then wait.
Yeah. Sutra 6. Haropi chit jarabhyam vilasi vishva siddhe. Although the Supreme Lord is transcendental, the mundane universe, consisting of sentient and non-sentient principles, is created only due to his sportive spirit. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary. The Supreme Lord creates all types of sentient and non-sentient objects by his potency and manifests his pastimes amongst them. Notice also where these capitals are. It means reality, the reality is always capital because it's meaning Krishna. Mm. But they're just talking about his position. It's tattva, right? And here his potency, right? The potency is also capitalized. So this means we're talking about the Swarup Shakti. So the Swarup Shakti is creating the sentient and the non-sentient, right? Because here at this point we're not discussing the spiritual world. That will come up later. So the sentient and the non-sentient mean the sentient meaning the living entities, the non-sentient meaning the material energy. So the Swarup Shakti is expanding all that, because the Swarup Shakti is the complete energy, which includes the internal, the external, and the marginal. Those three together, that's Swarup. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, I don't see how this sutra clears the doubts of Sangati.
Well, we'll have to see the... the comments of Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Because when we come to the end, if you have that, then, but if you say it in the first sentence, then it's natural that it will still remain. Does that make sense? Right? If you just follow the sutras themselves, all this will be worked out. But to make sure that we work it out, he's giving his commentaries. Right? Just like by hearing the Gita, Arjuna became self-realized, but we're reading the Gita and not becoming self-realized, so therefore we have commentary on the Gita. That helps us become self-realized. Does that make sense? Like that, because this is a run of, this is on the 6th, the 10th will be the end of establishing the personality of Godhead. Like that. Does that make sense? So they're bringing in all these different aspects that are connect with all the different philosophies and mundane methods of thought that can come up. So the purport will bring it out more. Because these went together, Tattva Sutra, Amnaya Sutra, and the Tattva Vivek. So we'll be studying here Tattva Sutra and Tattva Vivek. So they'll have a lot connecting there. I can't remember what the Amnaya Sutra, what is its format. I'm not sure. I mean, they'll all be a Dasa Mula, but whether it's just exactly just going through them, I don't remember. It's quite big. It's quite big. The Supreme Lord creates all type of sentient and non-sentient objects by his potency and manifests his pastimes among them. Right? So we mentioned his pastimes not as necessarily as Bhagavan, but as Paramatma and Brahman. At the same time, as though also he comes himself personally as Bhagavan and sports amongst them also. This world is full of wonderful, pleasing arrangements, the inconceivable connection between the sense organs and the corresponding materials, ability of different materials according to the physical needs, habitational facilities of the living beings by the divisions of land and seas, the beautiful performance and usefulness of planets, stars, stellar and solar systems, the termination of time according to the seasons. All these systematic and unprecedented arrangements cannot be created by inert matter or dry sentience. Without accepting the sportive nature of the Lord, there cannot be any pleasant conclusion. Because, I mean, if you think about it, even if we're being practical, a lot of this stuff is very expensive. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you want to, each of those trees are the same kind of tree, same species. But each one is growing different. One of them grows with a single trunk, some with two, some with multiple. Some come off of one main thing and everything coming off. Some of them branch out, they look like a brush. So you get all the different varieties of trees, or just in that tree, that one species. Right? And there's so many species. So now, if the tree was doing a very important mechanical function of, drawing up moisture, adjusting the air, you know, with the carbon dioxide and all that, why make all the trees different with different leaves? Because all the leaves do the same thing, all the different shapes are doing the same thing. So you just have one shape of tree, one shape of leaves, and there, you know, and that's it. Like that. So to have what's here, there has to be a sportive nature, right? Otherwise, because it's more than just practical. It's practical plus it's something that's wonderful and enjoyable and everything else. So you could have interactions and varieties of happiness. The other just gets the work done. Does that make sense?
Moon is the habitat for monads, a place for the jiva to develop.
So that's the point, is that if it was just practical, then why would there be so much? Why do you need 8,400,000 species of life? You don't require that. You know, just a few and it goes on. I mean, most of them we don't even see. We don't even know exist. I think they've figured out about 2 million or something. Yeah, between 2 and 3 million. That's all they figured out. But there's 8,400,000. And every year they find more that they didn't know were there. Without accepting the sportive nature of the Lord, there cannot be any pleasant conclusion. Right? It means everything's so pleasant, so unless He is sport, what conclusion you can come up with? It'll be a dry, boring conclusion. Right? You know? He made this place where we could suffer, right? That's why He made so much variety. You know? From these evidences follows that a certain sportive person has established all these insurmountable rules for the benefit of the world. The Lord's pastimes are of two types. One, the creation of the sentient and non-sentient beings and establishing the rules for them. The dry speculators can have faint idea about this. And two, manifestation of the Lord's spiritual pastimes in this universe. So in other words, that of the pastimes of creation, you know, destruction and maintenance, and the pastimes where He interacts with His devotees. Right? So these are the two like that. So all possible positions the jiva can take in this world refer to respective divine manifestations. In this connection, most of the sages scientifically accept 10 important avatars of Lord Vishnu. One, invertebrate, Matsya. Two, Shelley, Kurma. Three, vertebrate, Varaha. Four, erectly vertebrate as a combined form of mammon beast, Nrsimha. Mankind, Vamana. Six, barbaric, Parasaram. Seven, civilized, Ram. Eight, wise, Krishna. Nine, ultra-wise, Buddha. 10. Destructive. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the expert devotees realize the supreme divinity of the Lord, of Lord Krishna, and especially the extreme sweetness of His Vrindavan pastimes. The Lord's pastimes are eternal and transcendental, and not mythological or historical. The Prophet writes in his purport, the mantra 13, Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and everything that exists has emanated from Him. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the Lord says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Here is a correct description of the Supreme Lord given by the Lord himself. The words Sarvasya Prabhava indicate that Krishna is the creator of everyone, including Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Because these three principal deities of the material world are created by the Lord is the creator of all that exists in the material and spiritual worlds. Thus, all Vedic literature confirms that Narayana, or Krishna, is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita 5.1, also it is said that the Supreme Lord is Sri Krishna, Govinda, the delighter of every living being, and the primeval cause of all causes. The really learned persons know this from evidence given by the great sages and Vedas, unless they decide to worship Lord Krishna as all in all. Such persons are called Buddha, or really learned, because they worship only Krishna. Although it is established beyond a doubt that the Lord and his potency are simultaneously distinct and non-distinct, there are some people who argue that the Lord and his potency are only distinct. In the next sutra, the author refutes the idea that the transcendental potency is different from the Lord himself. Tas chaktitas tat varikyam iti chen na tat abhedat. The Lord's transcendental potency is a separate, isolated principle, but it is only identical with him. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Yes.
To come back to my question.
Yes.
Still not see the connection between the unintelligible and the spark of spirit.
The unintelligible.
The fact that, you know, he's unintelligible, so why bother? That's the doubt. Then the sutra is supposed to dispel this doubt, which says that the Lord has.
Yeah, because the point is this, why bother? Because he's unintelligible, but we see is how it's all created. There must be a sportive mentality. So that's something of interest. That's not dry.
But you cannot understand, you can interact.
Means the point that you wouldn't study it because he's beyond. But the point is that, and so therefore is dry. Subject of dry speculation. But this is more than dry. This is not dry at all. It's very interactive. It's sportive. So it's pleasurable. There's all kinds of interesting things. And the jiva is connected with these, how the Lord manifests, is how also the natures of the jivas manifest. You know, so it's all interactive and all that. So more of that will be explained in this verse. Because then someone is saying, okay, then that's there, but they could only be manifest, the Lord and his potency, you know, you could see them, right? Like that. They are distinct. But the non-distinct, meaning they're formless. How would you have a formless Lord and his energy that are different? You know what I'm saying? So you can only define them when they're distinct, not when they're.
Also, it shows that since it is his creation, and he has a sportive nature, so it indicates that he's. Like, able to be known by the rules of this creation?
Yes. Yeah, because he's great. So there's also the two. One is that the creation itself is so, you know, complex in what's there, and then having created this variety of environments, he comes himself and personally has pastimes. Right? So he's already that element of his involvement in it, that sportive nature, is just in the creation itself. Right? Even in the destruction, you know, it could just disappear, fall up. No, but Ananta from the bottom starts to burn it up. The sun goes 12 times the size or the heat and starts burning things up. You know, the unlimited rain and that just floods. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, they don't even come up with this good when they create their, you know, destructive, you know, themes, you know, like that. You know, it's never this good, right? So it's just so much is there, you know. So it's there, you know. There's the waters of disillusion, and then Markandeya, since he's Chiranjeev, is floating around on it, and then he sees this kid, you know, going by, you know, on a banyan leaf, floating there, sucking on his toe. you know. And then when he looks at him, then he opens his mouth and he goes inside, and then he's inside the normal universe again, you know. And, you know, so all these different, you know, sports. Yes.
Could it be that the person was not necessarily agnostic in the way that they, I don't understand, so I don't care, but more like I don't understand, so it's too hard. So this idea of being able to see Krishna in the material world, like the 10th chapter of Vibhuti Yoga, and seeing how everything's so nicely, perfectly organized and arranged, gives that encouragement to try and understand.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. But you could also have that just on that, is that it's a dry thing, so why get involved? Because we can get involved in things of this world that makes us happy. But then the point is that what makes you happy in this world, all those arrangements of the Lord. And you will, because of the arrangements here, you feel in a sportive mood to enjoy. So that means they had to have been created in that mood. Yeah. The supreme sportive. Yeah. So it is, yes, so it's inspirational rather than.
And also because it is by his sportive nature, this is shows the purpose that it is to come to him, to interact with him on the platform of sportive nature.
Yeah, so the sportive isn't the problem, it's the sportive without him that's the problem. Because he's sportive, and if you want to be sportive, how sportive can we be? You know, like that. We're limited, so that means we're very limited in our sportive ability. But he's unlimited, so then that will be happy.
This means that we get this same mentality, to some extent, because Krishna.
Yes, because Krishna has it. So we have it in unlimited. I think you even mentioned that. But I don't know which place, but he mentioned.
Yes. Like the argument at the end of Sutra 5, verse 4, where he brought up about the ultimate reality is endowed, but those mentioned next one's quite unintelligible, very faintly known. They're like, that's the understanding, and then he draws a conclusion from that. Therefore, it's only by dry speculation.
Mm-hmm.
And that conclusion, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would be the way to look at it. Right. So still he's unintelligible, but at least you can appreciate that it's not dry; it's sportive.
So you can appreciate it even though you don't understand.
Yeah, because ultimately it's been made is that without approaching the Lord through devotion, there's no question of understanding. And so in that devotion, it's activity. So there is that interaction, that is that sportive element.
And devotion starts with appreciation.
Yes, you have to appreciate. So that you get from devotees. So by the association with devotees, then you gain that. But if you don't associate with devotees, then you won't gain that. So you have to associate with devotees. That's what's been said before. So these are just giving, you know, if there's a specific doubt in that way, so then one can.
Question. The blind who can, only by getting the Vaikulasana, we can understand the mysteries of this world. Like
yes, basically.
But what means to the Bhaktivinoda princess, I'm thinking a lot about Christians can give Bhaktivinoda, Muslims can give.
They're not talking about bhakti. They're not talking about bhakti. You do good work, you go to heaven. You don't do good work, you go to hell. That's all they talk about. You know what I'm saying? That's what they talk about. They talk about something else. You've heard? Theologians might talk a little bit more, but your regular priest and common person. Being religious means doing your prescribed duties, you know, because God said you should, and so you do them. And then as a reward for that, you'll go to heaven. So they're not talking about devotion. You can use the words devotion to God and that, but they equate that with just having that faith. But devotion means that you're doing it for their pleasure, not for yours. You know, you want to go to heaven. They're not thinking God wants us in heaven, because then they would be talking about the Garden of Eden. Right? Because they're with God and interacting with God, but basically you don't hear any talk about that.
But Jesus says, one thing is Jesus and one is the preaching of the Christians today, of course. They say, love God with all thy heart and mind. So
that's
my,
in the old,
my kingdom is not from this. No, that's in the New Testament.
Well, that's the New Testament. That's based on one of the ones in the Old Testament. Yeah. Yes, but that's the what it's supposed to be, but no one's talking about it. So that's why he's guru, but they don't know what.
But this is precisely what they're asking, what's the most important point? What's the most important commandment? That's what he said.
Right. But that's based on the you have these there's three of the Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. There's three of them. And that in the Old Testament. And that those then, one of them says, you should love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. Right? And it goes through like that. So when you're walking, when you're sitting down, when you know, like that, it should be, you should have it on your hand, on your forehead, and on your gait. So that also talks, but that's one verse. So what was Narad Muni's criticism of Vyasadeva's Mahabharata? 25,000 verses are on the Pandavas. 75,000 aren't. What's the problem? Yeah, because of the volume of the other, it gets lost. Manu very clearly says you shouldn't eat meat. But, quoting from Manu, then the animal sacrifices, all they're bona fide. But having explained them all, he says, you know, in two or three verses, don't eat meat. That's where the word mung saha comes from. Mum, me, saha, you. I kill you, you kill me. That's where it comes from. You know what I'm saying? So the point is because it's not brought to the forefront, people don't notice it. They only notice what they like to hear, you know, the other parts, you know, like that.
So, not by work.
Yeah, so, yeah. So that's why Bhagavatam is important, because it's direct. Gita is direct, but that's 700 verses out of 100,000. Did we say? We didn't say.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
Jai
Śrīla Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Śrīla Gaura Prema ki